Appalachia is no stranger to the boom and bust cycle of extractive industries. The rise and fall of coal has left the region with economic insecurity that touches every part of life. A new book by the journalists of the Ohio Valley Resource, which reports from West Virginia, Ohio, and Kentucky, looks at health outcomes, measures of wealth, and environmental issues in Appalachia.
It just kept striking me, we're falling farther behind. We're falling farther behind.
That's Jeff Young, the managing editor of Ohio Valley Resource, on how they came up with the title of their book, Appalachian Fall. I spoke with him and reporter Brittany Patterson about it recently. The book is based on your reporting of issues facing Appalachia, many of which are tied to the coal industry. And you mentioned the term from a rural development expert, resource curse, meaning Appalachia was blessed with this resource, coal, but never really benefited economically from it. Why is that?
As economists explain it, it's because the wealth is so closely tied to a single economic activity that no other efforts are really put into developing other things. So an entrepreneurial middle class doesn't really have room to grow. There is typically underinvestment in infrastructure and education. There is very little diversification of the businesses that are in the community because everything is tied to that one resource, whether it's oil or coal or gold or you name it. And then when that one resource goes away, there's very little resilience in the economy to turn the corner. And that's, in my opinion, a big part of what we're facing in Appalachia and Appalachian coal communities.
Brittany, you've reported on Coshocton County, Ohio, where the coal-fired power plant, American Electric Power's Conesville power plant, was shut down ahead of schedule. It was a fixture there for decades, and its closure caused ripple effects in the community. And here's Denise Guthrie. She's a business owner.
We're hurting. You know, there's empty buildings, and that's hard from the standpoint is, you know, I can always say I remember what it was.
So how did the closure impact power plant workers and others in the community, including schools?
Coshocton is a really interesting case study in what we see when not only coal mining, which is something I think we often associate with the region, pulls back, but when coal-fired power plants start to close. And we've seen so many coal-fired power plants close in the last 15 years across the country and including in Ohio and West Virginia and Pennsylvania. So it's not just that these good jobs are suddenly not there anymore. One local school district, the Riverview Local School District, which literally like overlooked the Conesville power plant, their superintendent told me that once the plant is closed fully, which it is now, they were going to lose 10% of their budget. And then there's the fact that perhaps some of those students of those workers are going to move away. And so it all just sort of drifts apart and out of a community when it loses something like this. What I think is so interesting about Coshocton is this is a community that understood that that reality was coming to them as the plant began to close down and really wanted to look proactively at, okay, this has happened to us before. This is a community that lost a General Electric plant, a paper mill. They'd been here before. What can we do to try and mitigate the steps? And part of that was trying to help workers at the plant work on their resumes, work on getting them jobs, try to keep them. Because I think what we've learned from researchers is if you lose the people who work at these plants or work at these mines and they leave, they're not going to come back. And that's really a death knell for a lot of these communities.
The petrochemical industry, another extractive industry, is being touted by industry and some politicians as a saving grace for Appalachia, turning natural gas products into the building blocks of plastic, creating jobs. But others in the region are working on ways to solve inequality, addiction, climate change. What are some of those initiatives that you've reported on?
Well, my mind goes to a guy that we quote in the final chapter of the book there, Peter Hilly, who's with the Mountain Association in eastern Kentucky. He points out that what we need are elegant solutions. We need solutions that address more than one problem at a time. Because as he puts it, we got so many problems here. If you're just solving one at a time, you can't keep up. So they're looking for ways where you can tackle some small portion of the climate change question and create jobs and improve living conditions. One, like what they call low-hanging fruit approach to that, is improving people's homes through insulation and weatherization, installing solar power, which now, in the economics of our electric utility industry, means they'll get their electricity cheaper, they'll spend less money to heat or cool their homes. So it creates jobs, it helps improve the housing stock, which is a portion of the inequality problem. There are some forms of agriculture that can both work to improve mine land that's been damaged from surface mining, fix some carbon dioxide in the soil in the process through the growth of things like miscanthus is a fast-growing tall grass that can be used for a variety of things, including generating electricity as a biofuel. So there are a lot of possibilities out there and a lot of things that people are looking at. But the question, I think, is can they scale up to meet the challenge? Because we've got a lot of people who need jobs, and the service sector jobs that have been creating jobs are not providing the kind of pay and benefits that people find they can use to support a family.
You know, I think this COVID-19 global pandemic has really illustrated the fact that retooling your economy to be an entirely service-based economy is really challenging, especially when something like this hits. And that's one of the reasons that I think we're seeing such a coordinated interest in this idea of a just transition. There have been multiple plans released by groups that have been working on this for a long time, but really sort of putting themselves out there as we approach this presidential race, saying, probably we're going to do something on climate change. Probably we're going to do something about this COVID-19 pandemic again, and it's probably going to cost lots and lots of money from the federal government. And we here in Appalachia, we want a piece of that pie. We want a substantial piece of that pie. And we want to make sure that we're investing it in ways that really help rebuild the economy here. And that's what I think has been really fascinating.
You write in the book that Appalachia should be seen as part of America, not this strange, separate region with all of the stereotypes that we all know. Quote, in fact, we argue that the resolution to many of America's most pressing challenges lies in better understanding and addressing Appalachia's conundrum. What do you mean by that?
Think, for example, of the closure of the power plant and the challenge that that community there in Coshocton County faces. They're doing everything right in terms of providing worker training and education opportunities for people to try to find new jobs. But what we've learned from talking to people who have studied transition, economic transition, and the question of work training is that that is insufficient. Training a worker for a job doesn't create a job. It really puts the onus on the worker and sort of subtly says, it's kind of your fault. If only you'd better educate yourself or find a new skill. And it also assumes some mobility on the worker's part to go to wherever this mysterious new job might arise. That has not really worked well for Appalachia. And where I think Appalachia holds a lesson for the rest of the country is if you look at the rate of technological change that we are likely to encounter in the coming decade or so, artificial intelligence, the rise of driverless vehicles, for example, there is absolutely no question that they are going to eliminate a lot of jobs. Now, they'll probably create some other jobs, and there's a healthy debate about whether technology is net job generator or job creator. I argue that America has never really done transition very well. We just kind of leave it to the market to figure out. And as steel towns and farm towns and now coal-dependent towns are discovering, what that often means is you're on your own. I don't think that's going to work anymore for America. I don't think we can just treat communities as disposable because at a certain point, there's a backlash. There's a backlash in our politics that we can feel right now. When a community feels left behind, that community becomes the ripe territory for demagogues and authoritarians who would take advantage of that. So America's got to figure out transition for economies. And we need to do it right here in Appalachia right now. And if we figure out how to do it well, I believe we become a model for other parts of America to follow when the rolling change and disruption of technology hits other communities.
Brittany, I know you're from California, but you've been reporting here for several years. What have you learned about Appalachia through your reporting that surprised you or that maybe changed your mind about this region?
I think it's the people. Without a doubt, I have never met such hardworking and dedicated and passionate people. As an energy and environment reporter, like, my beat is kind of a bummer sometimes, to be totally honest. I've stood in front of massive coal ash ponds with, you know, a husband and wife team that have been fighting it for years. I've been to Superfund sites where most of the community has gotten cancer, and yet there are these people who will invite me into their pickup trucks and take me around town and tell me, a reporter, for the 17,000th time why I should care and why people should care about their communities. And that passion and that dedication to community and to this place, that's unlike anything I've ever experienced.
Thank you so much for talking with me.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you.
That was reporter Brittany Patterson and Jeff Young, managing editor of Ohio Valley Resource. Their book, based on their reporting with colleagues in West Virginia, Ohio, and Kentucky, is called Appalachian Fall: Dispatches from Coal Country on What's Ailing America.